Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, the Everyday Innovator is sponsored by Product Innovation Educators, where my colleagues and I provide online training for product managers and innovators. July is MPDP month with a $200 discount on training for PDMA certification. Learn more at www.productinnovationeducators.com/July. Now, on to the interview. Hi, everyone. This is Chad. Today, I have the pleasure of bringing you the VP of Innovation at the RELX Group, Jeff Honius. With listeners may know that better as the Reed Elsevier Company. They're a multi-billion dollar international publishing and information company. And to provide some context, the company profile shares that it helps scientists make new discoveries, lawyers win cases, doctors save lives, and executives forge relationships with their clients, which personally I thought was a pretty powerful statement to share about the company and its extent of its reach. Jeff's background is in technology and web-based product development. Previous to his innovation role, he also contributed to his company's adopting agile development practices. Jeff, thank you so much for being part of our innovation discussion today.
Oh, thank you, Chad. I'm really excited about being here and being able to share with your audience.
And Jeff, I am really excited about what you're going to share, because being inside such a large company, helping with innovation is really important to our listeners, because so many of them are thinking about how can they contribute more to innovation and whatever the role is inside their company, and learning from your experiences will be helpful. So let's start a little bit with that background story on what experiences led to becoming the VP of innovation.
Great. Yeah. So I've been with a RELX Group now over 18 years. Before that, though, I was in a startup, which was really exciting. You know, I was a bit younger then. And so it was a great opportunity to learn a lot of things, learn a lot through failure, frankly. So the startup didn't work out, but I always had that sort of somewhat entrepreneurial passion coming out of that. And then as I learned more about what it was going to be like, you know, in a bigger company environment in RELX Group, I've kept finding ways to work in areas where there was that entrepreneurial element. So usually you would find me attached more into the new product development teams and projects. Mm-hmm. And as you said before, my background's in technology. So I was working from the technology side, you know, in either more of a strategy or an architecture role in many cases. And then, as you also noted, I got to a point where I really looked at the question of how do we do development better, sort of innovate the development process. And that's where I took a look at agile practices and how we could adopt those and work in several of the groups to actually put those practices in there. And as you look at agile development, that, you know, kind of fits hand in hand with innovation, because a real piece of agile development is taking on board customer feedback through the process and changing what you're doing and trying mm-hmm. to deliver new value. So all of that led up to now several years ago, I think it was 2006, when the company took a real hard look at what can we do to actually up our game in innovation, so to speak. And there was an executive team put together. I was the technology person that was inside that group. And we spent a few months looking at how other companies, quote, do innovation. And of course, we found lots of things that were very different. But we also saw some commonalities. And we made some recommendations back to the CEO at that time. And one of those was that given the diversity of businesses in RELX Group, and we have a lot of, it's sort of a decentralized model, there wasn't going to be a one-size-fit-all innovation process, so to speak. But there were some best practices that were happening and some good tools being used in different parts of the business. And we thought that there was an opportunity to share more of that and to share those best practices and tools across the group, and that it was made sense to put together a small team in the corporate center to facilitate that. And so I volunteered, and that's what led me into this role. And we've since branched out from just trying to share best practice, where we actually do get engaged in some projects where it makes sense.
Okay, so no doubt you learned a lot doing that benchmark study of what other organizations have done in terms of creating an innovation role and trying to become more innovative. And I'm sure you saw lots of different models, like, you know, some companies that have a chief innovation sort of officer, they structure it that they're really the ones, their team's responsible for innovation efforts. Others are more being assistants and helping groups inside the company, and all kinds of flavors in between. How did you, in this, you know, large but decentralized global company, end up structuring your team and what you're responsible for?
Right. So we have two primary responsibilities. One is to build innovation capability within the business. Like I was saying before, sharing that best practice, helping them set up their innovation process, bringing them training and on the tools that they can use in that innovation process. That's one half of it. And the other half, as I was starting to get into, is the strategic innovation projects, where we see opportunities, particularly those that cross business lines, to help a business with one of their innovation projects that really not only will help them, but produce a learning or something another business might be able to use. We have some resources get involved. So I actually have sort of half the team. I have four people in total, half the team, two people focused mainly on the build innovation capability side, and the other two focused on the strategic project side.
Very good. And I think that may have surprised some of the everyday innovators that you have a team of four people to really drive this inside a global company of, what, about 30,000 employees?
Right.
Right. And so you're really looking at trying to be that catalyst for helping to create innovation with groups that need the help and hopefully are willing, but I suspect sometimes you're having to push also.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, all of our businesses are a little bit different, and there's a lot of innovation capacity and, mm-hmm. and people within those businesses. So, you know, we're just looking for those opportunities to help them sort of on the next step of their journey and to give them a little bit of boost where we can either bring some expertise or a little extra capacity.
And I think another key thing that you said, or a dimension that you bring to this, is looking at opportunities that reach across businesses. Because too often, especially in a company your size, it's hard for someone to be responsible for that, to even have knowledge of what is going on in one business line versus another, and missing out on potential synergies between those. So that seems like a really important part of the role. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there's probably a lot more that I don't know what's going on than I do know that's going on, but I do have the luxury of being in this central position and seeing the diversity of what's happening, as well as having relationships across the business with having been here now 18 years and being able to make those connections. And you know, probably have had talked with other people before about, you know, innovation a lot of times is just about connecting the dots and putting people who have maybe worked on one type of application in touch with another group that is about to embark in the same direction and helping them along. Mm-hmm. And even though our businesses are very different in some ways and serving different kinds of customers, there are several commonalities that we see, particularly along the lines that a lot of our products are online, you know, web-based information services that help, whether it's a lawyer or a scientist or a doctor, get access to the information they need to do their job and, as we say, sort of improve their outcomes. So that's our goal. And when you look at that, there's a lot of similarities in the technologies and ways that we would deliver those applications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so much of it is about making those connections just with the people that are already doing innovative work
and getting them to, you know, work together and come up with the next new products.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why don't we dive into a specific example? If you can share a success story of how you, you know, have gone about this, how you've helped a group in your company with innovation and what steps that you took.
Sure. So in terms of some of the projects that we've done, in one area in particular, we've worked on projects that involve, to use the common term, big data analytics. So if you look at our strategy and what we're trying to do in a number of these areas, we're trying to move from just providing content, you know, documents and information people can read, to synthesizing that into data that then we can do analytics on to get more to what the end user is trying to accomplish when they read all these documents and you know, the insights that they're trying to get. So part of doing that is applying analytics to the data. And we have a big data analytics platform that we've now open sourced called HPCC Systems. It grew out of one part of our business in the LexisNexis business. And what we've been doing the last 2-3 years now is really concentrating on how we can leverage that technology in other parts of the business. And that has led to some projects, one in particular with one of the groups where we needed to do some record linking, which involves taking a bunch of records, and a bunch means hundreds of millions, not two or three, right?
And Jeff, tell us real quick what a record is.
Yeah, so a data record, you know, think about a record about a person, your name, your address, your phone number, maybe your occupation, but that kind of record that you would find in a database somewhere. And one of the complications is when you look at these big data problems, often you've got a lot of records, but they came from a lot of different places, or there's a lot of different records about the same person or the same company. And one of the challenges you have is to link those together, say, okay, in your case, we want all the records about Chad, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't want to mix in records that aren't about this Chad McAllister, because there's probably more than one person out there with your name.
Yeah, and, hard to believe, but likely.
That's right. There's fewer when you have a name like mine, but there's still at least 3 or 4 of us from what I can tell. And so anyway, that's sort of the problem. And we've seen this problem in our risk solutions business. And we looked at the problem in this other part of our business that, look, we have technology here that we think can fit. And that business was being successful solving this, working with an external partner, but it was going to be difficult to kind of take it to the next level, what they might be able to do with the data, just working with an external partner. And we said, well, here again, we've got this technology. Let's try to apply this technology to that problem and see where we could go bringing this capability to that data. And, you know, then... So that was easy, and people said, sure, that sounds like a good thing to do, but it gets complicated in, well, first you have to have the resources to do it. Well, luckily, as part of my innovation team, I have, back to those two people, one of those is a developer that works in HPCC systems, and so we're able to provide that kind of resource as well as the actual computing cluster that we needed to put the data in. And so that was part of the equation, but we needed some expertise out of our risk solutions business that really understands this linking technology. So I was able to reach into that group and find an expert, because they were excited about the opportunity to leverage their technology for this other business. And then I found some champions within the business that really wanted to see the problem solved, and could see the opportunity of being able to do this with their data. And so, of course, they not only brought the data, but brought the expertise around the data, you know, bringing that together in this lab environment was sort of some of the keys to success. Again, it wasn't simple because there's a lot of uncertainty. We didn't know whether in this case, this approach was really going to work in this situation. We didn't know whether ultimately we would get to the kind of place that we thought we could be, where we could take it to the next level. So, you know, when you're talking to the different stakeholders, it was hard to, for them to understand what commitment they should make. You know, they have a lot of different priorities on where they want to invest their development dollars. So using, again, this lab structure, we were able to say, well, we can go work on this and do the proof of concept and try to reduce that uncertainty threshold so that it becomes clearer what can be done, what it's going to cost to do it, you know, and what the output's going to look like, what the result's going to look like. And so we've been able to do that and actually then successfully transition that into the business where they're now taking that on and bringing that solution into their development infrastructure, if you want to call it that.
So when it comes to innovation in an organization, there's lots of barriers that we see, you know, purposely or accidentally placed, but barriers to innovation that occur. And I kind of thought you might be sharing an example of, you know, we've provided these training tools, these templates, you know, we added some skills to this group, because those are barriers too. But this was a different barrier you were knocking down, wasn't it? Which was, you know, a group that had interest in doing something, but not really the resources and maybe some risk aversion there because they weren't sure it was going to work. And so you were knocking down the barrier that, you know, let us try doing a proof of concept and see if we can make it work for you. And get them interested then to take it further.
Yeah. That and you know, that sometimes it's just that, I don't want to say fear of the unknown, but you know, there's all sorts of different options a business has in terms of executing on their growth strategy, and the ones that have more certainty around them are naturally, you know, easier to pick. And you know, so whenever you can, you know, address some of those uncertainties, then you get an opportunity maybe to do something that might have a bigger impact, but hasn't been invested in because of that question of, will we actually get that impact?
Yeah, absolutely. We both have a mutual friend that's at one of the Relix Group companies, LexisNexis, and that's Steve Hess. And one of his phrases stands out to me, and I have used it frequently since having met him, talking about, you know, you're still driving the car down the road, and sometimes you just got to change the tires, even though while you're driving the car down the road, right? And it's, and as he talks about it, it's that idea that we have an operation moving forward, it has to keep moving forward, but at the same time, you have to make some decisions about things you're going to try and see if they help you move forward even better.
Yeah, no, and it's tricky because that analogy works well with, you know, a large corporation. You've got existing revenues, existing customers. You know, change is good, but you also have to balance the risk of those changes with, you know, the fact that you have customers that you want to continue serving, and there's only so much change you can do at a certain time. So, you know, being able to make some of those changes or experiment with some of those changes in a way that allows you the freedom to fail and to learn is important, so that if you do swap out that tire, to try to keep using the metaphor here, it, you know, that you know it's going to fit, and right, that once you tighten down the bolts, the car is going to move, and it's like, oh, okay, it was the right tire, you know, to put on at this time.
Yep, exactly. And speaking about change, and at times that we do fail when that happens, and there's always resistance to change, you know, a lot of time that's when we indeed do learn the most. So is there an example that you have about, you know, when you try to help a group, try to get something done, and it didn't work out the way that you had planned, and things kind of fell apart?
Well, I'd like to think that everything's been successful, but you're absolutely right. Failure is always sort of part and parcel with success. And anyone that's worked in around innovation has probably heard failure is part of the process too much. So, but we've experienced that too. We looked at how to leverage crowdsourcing, the idea of getting large numbers of people to help not only give you ideas, but to help you flesh out and elaborate those ideas. And there's a number of platforms out there that facilitate this. You know, they're basically a web application that's going to allow your employees, in our case, this was employee facing, to submit ideas and then comment and then rank and vote and put their sort of thumbs up, thumbs down on this. And these platforms get into all sorts of great engagement features, you know, leaderboards and people getting points by submitting things, and even prediction markets, if you want to go that. So very rich in terms of features. And the concept is very valid that, crowdsourcing is why, instead of just asking, one smart person what their idea is to solve a particular, internal or customer problem, why not ask a lot of smart people? Mm-hmm. So the concept seemed valid, but we went out, got one of these platforms, put in place, worked with one of the businesses, and this goes back several years now, and we're very successful in actually getting the ideas. What we underestimated was the amount of work and planning that needed to go into what to do once those ideas were submitted. And so in that case, there was 200 ideas sitting there, and then the realization set in, there's good ideas here, but there's really no capacity in the current plans to take these on anytime soon. And where do you begin trying to sift and select from among 200 ideas which ones really do fit? And that was sort of a learning right there. Mm-hmm. And kind of progressing from that, we've tried it again, and what we've learned, unfortunately, more than one time, is that if you set up these communities, as we call them, for soliciting these ideas through these crowdsourcing platforms, the easiest part of the process is setting it up. It is not a Field of Dreams kind of thing, build it, they'll come, and the illusion that, if we get a lot of people, some of these ideas are going to be so fantastic that they're going to be so, obviously wonderful that we'll naturally, someone will grab onto them and run with them. Well, that tends not to happen. So you really do need to think through what the process is going to be, who are going to be the champions, how are you going to communicate back to the people submitting these ideas that 200 ideas may go in, and it may be only two ideas that move on, but that's success. Because these things can backfire, right? Because you've got two ideas moving on. Now you have 198 people who submitted ideas kind of wondering, like, why not mine? And you don't want them to disengage then. So we do have examples now where we've been successful, but it's really been a learning process of seeing how these communities and people how people respond to the challenges that we put out. And one of the things too is to not make it just a big open suggestion box, but really try to put very specific business challenges out there, saying, please give us your ideas on X, and knowing that X is an important problem that somebody in the business wants to solve, needs to solve, and is ready and receptive to the ideas that are going to be submitted, and then putting that process in place that says, okay, this is what happens when the ideas come in. You know, we wait 2-3 weeks, we collect these ideas. Then here's the criteria that people kind of filter them on, and then what's going to happen next. So that's the learning that we've produced. Unfortunately, it's come, you know, through a few instances of deploying the tool and hoping that good things would happen. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make it sound like we were completely naive, but in some cases, we really did just underestimate what it was going to take to get the value out of that kind of process.
And everyday innovators listening, there's some really good nuggets of wisdom in there. Jeff, I appreciate you sharing that history, you know, with that crowdsourcing approach to building communities and then trying to manage the ideas they create. Because a lot of companies struggle with this, right? We think it's going to be a great idea. It will be motivating to our employees, our partners, our suppliers to solicit their feedback, their ideas for how we can do a better job serving our customers. Too often, it seems like, you know, from your experience, and I've heard it from other places too, it kind of falls apart when it comes down to actually managing the process and doing something with the ideas that impacts the organization. And you shared, I want to highlight this, that it sounded like you were finding more success by making sure there was a specific business challenge that was defined when you asked for the ideas and what the criteria would be for assessing them, and just making the whole process really transparent so people knew what to expect when they submitted ideas in the first place.
Yeah, you got it. It's one of those creativity loves constraint is mm-hmm. the way I've heard it phrased, but it really helps focus people. And then you get ideas that kind of fit with a problem, right? Instead of being so open-ended that someone's submits an idea that could be a great idea, but is so far removed from the company strategy that, you know, it's not right for us, which again, you can filter that away and you can explain to them that, you know, that really didn't fit with company strategy, but that's also work just to explain it. And you can avoid some of that by putting these specific challenges out there. And then people know, well, here's where I need to apply my thinking. This is what, you know, where the problems exist. And, you know, if I can come up with something clever, then I'm making a real contribution.
Right. Absolutely. Very good. Thank you for sharing your experiences with that crowdsourcing approach to the idea management system for getting good ideas and what you've learned along the way. Like to ask you to reflect back to life as a younger product manager. So knowing what you know now about working with products, working with teams, trying to create innovative products that really offer customers value, what would you have liked to have emphasized or focused on when you started? So if you were talking to the product manager that's just starting out, you know, maybe a year into their career as a product manager, what is that thing that you've learned that would be really helpful for them to know to make sure they do now?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's probably a lot of things to say, but one thing in particular is about customer involvement and not the kind that, you know, it's a lot of people latch on to, well, I need to talk to customers at the beginning of the process. Let me do a lot of interviews or ethnography, different kinds of studies to, you know, customer advisory boards, whatever the structure is, lots of ways to gather input at the beginning. And then there's usually some validation work that's done at the end before you launch a product. Those two things kind of come naturally. It's the in-between. And I think the major learning is there are plenty of tools, and this comes largely back to sort of agile development, since the kinds of products I've worked on primarily are software products. And engaging customers throughout that process in some form, you know, helping you continually prioritize and validate. Sometimes the development process can be longish, right? Mm-hmm. And so things will change, and being able to pick up on those changes so you don't hear one thing at the beginning, go into development and pop out at launch with something that fit with what you heard at the beginning, but, you know, the world's moved a bit. So Having that involvement throughout, and you have to guard against the danger of over listening to what the customers are telling you. The Henry Ford, if I asked my customers what they want, they would tell me a faster horse. You have to, avoid some of that, but continually going back, and allowing that feedback to affect how you're prioritizing and, what you're actually doing in the development process. A lot of techniques, but think about how to do that and what you need to be able to do that successfully.
Excellent. Yeah, lot to be learned by staying close to customers throughout the entire process. So as everyday innovators know, I like to kind of wrap up interviews by asking for a success or innovation quote and why you chose that particular one. So what is the one you have for us?
I have one that I don't know applies in all situations, but it's a bit ancient, coming from Niccolo Machiavelli. And it goes like this. It's long, unfortunately. It ought to be remembered that there is nothing more difficult to take in hand, more perilous to conduct, or more uncertain in its success than to take the lead in the introduction of a new order of things. Because the innovator has for enemies all those who have done well under the old conditions and lukewarm defenders and those who may do well under the new. And, it goes on a little bit from there, but the essence for that, I mean, I see two things in that. One is the sort of don't be daunted by the adversity that one might face in the innovation process. It's natural. It's probably a sign that you are actually aiming at an impact that could be really good. I mean, you don't know that maybe at the start, but you kind of have to look for these signposts, and the fact that sometimes people are naysayers is one of those signposts. You just may be onto something. And the other aspect of it is it sort of reminds us that, particularly in a large organization, there's a real human element to the execution of innovation. And, as much as people try to be objective, very business focused, a lot of factors come into play about how things have been done, what's made us successful in the past. And when you start to suggest that we're going to change that, it can make people uncomfortable. And that, and I respect that. So I look at it as you have to remember that human element and figure out how to leverage that human element, some of this gets more into change management per se than innovation, but how to build a winning coalition around your idea to be able to push it through.
Absolutely. And in innovation, we are truly doing something new, and that requires change management skills to be. And I like how you encouraged us to persevere through those naysayers, that you might be on the right track if you're actually people are resisting it. Thank you for sharing that. Excellent quote. And Jeff, I again appreciate your time. I know in trying to arrange this with you that when we were looking to schedule this, you're often on a plane or in a meeting in some part of the world. And I appreciate you taking time out and talk to the Everyday Innovators about your experience with innovation.
Oh, I'm happy to do it, Chad. And thank you again for having me on your Everyday Innovator.
Thanks for listening. It would mean so much to me if you would take a minute and leave a rating or a review in iTunes for The Everyday Innovator. A rating is super quick, as you only need to click the number of stars you feel the podcast deserves. This will help other product managers find this valuable resource. Also, thanks to our sponsor, Product Innovation Educators.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.